tell me the background of your parents, where they came from? And
let me see. My mother came from a small village which sometimes belonged to Poland and sometimes belonged to Germany. So she was, in the morning they would teach Polish and in the afternoon they would teach German, so she learned the both languages. And my father, I don't know much about him because I was only 8 years old when my father died. So all I can say is what my mother used to say, that he was like a merchant marine or something, you know, in the Army or Navy. I can't tell you what. I don't know much about it. And my mother was a young girl when she came to this country. She was married here. And she was married at St. Stanislaus Church. And there were 8 children, and we were all baptized in that church. And my children went to school. All of us children, 8 children went to school there. And my children went to school there and graduated from that same parish.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Well, do you know, was there like a particular reason that they ended up in Chicago?
Well, I don't know whether, what I could add to that. The only thing that I know and that I can remember is my folks landed in what they called the old neighborhood around Milwaukee and Ashland. And it was a Polish settlement where mostly all people that live in that vicinity were Poles. And naturally, this parish, there were 2 Polish parishes, and most of the people belonged to those 2 churches at that time. See? And my mother, in her early days with my father, they bought this little home, and after that, they had remodeled it. And then, of course, the children grew up and all got married, and I was the last one. So I lived with mother till her dying day.
So you grew up in this. You grew up in
that same in the same building. I was born and raised there. Outside of, I'll tell you, there was a span there, maybe of about 3 years, when my folks had a tavern right across the street from where my mother had that home. And my folks had that tavern. And that tavern, when my father died, it went to my brother. And then that brother died, it went to another brother. And it stayed in the family for quite a number of years. So I was practically it's in the same block, only across the street. So we lived in 2 places, see, in the tavern and across the street.
Wasn't the first shop that she worked in my daughter too?
Yes. I was born in 1899. I was 14 years old on the 3rd of May. And the 4th of May I started to work.
Had you had any exposure to tailoring before that?
No.
You mentioned that your mother used to
Mother used to take pants home and finish pants by hand, the lining and the cuffs. They used to put a sort of a rubber in the cuff, see? They used to finish all that by hand, and the lining, that was all hand sewing. And there were a lot of tailor shops in the neighborhood there. It was noted for its small contracting shops, see? But when they started organizing, then they were all closing up because there were so many of them that there wasn't enough to go around. And then, like, when I worked in Koenig and Fisher, I only worked there a short time. And then, where my brother had the tavern, across the alley was a small contracting shop. And I got a job in that small contracting shop. And then I worked there. In the meantime, I got married, and my 2 children came, see? And but I kept, when I was pregnant and I was ready, maybe about 5 or 6 months pregnant, then I quit And then when they got dizzy, they sent for me. And then my babies were small, but I had my mother, so my mother would take care of the babies, and I would go to work. It was right across the street and across the alley. And then they would let me go home at 10 o'clock to nurse my baby. And then at noon again, I'd go home, and mother would have lunch. And then at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I would come home again and nurse the baby and go back to work. And that took place with both children. I got a girl and a boy. So I'd done that with both of my children. And then my baby was only 4 months old when my husband lost practically both of his hands. He lost his right hand till his wrist, and he lost all his fingers on his other hand except this little finger and a half a thumb. And that's how he got along in life. But he wasn't out of work all the time. There was times when he, through politics, he got jobs like the Board of Education as a watchman, and then he worked in Dunning in the state hospital. Because of my background, my brothers were in politics, and because of my background, he was able to get a job, see? And because we were quite popular in that neighborhood, having a tavern and brothers being in politics. So that's how he happened to get jobs. But he was sick on and off quite a bit. I had my hands full. So I raised my two children. I took care of my mother. My mother died right in my arms. And we lived in my mother's home. And I didn't have to pay no rent, and that's how I got along.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then she permitted me to go to work, and we never were on relief. Never, never.
Did she originally start working when your father died?
When my father died? No, because there was three of us at home. She couldn't. When my father died, my brother was about 13, and my sister was about 10, and I was about 8 or 9. See?
So how did she first get introduced to Taylor?
I had a brother that served in the Navy, and my brother came home. We, in the meantime, had the tavern when my brother, he served his full hitch, you know, and he came home, and he was sick 2 weeks, and he died. And in those days, you got 30 days to re-enlist. And if you re-enlist in those 30 days, you're considered still in the service within those 30 days, see? So he died within those 30 days. And my mother was able to get a pension of $12 a month and $16 rent, and then whatever little money that she had, that we got along. Then my brother got old enough, he was able to go to work because he was about 13. When my father died.
Uh-huh.
So that's how we lived.
But how did she originally get introduced to Taylor, your mother?
My mother, well, through hard times. I think things were pretty tough then too, you know. And
Had she had experience with it before?
No, no. And my father worked on the docks. You know what the docks is? What do they call those? Merchant Marines? Do they call him?
I think so.
I don't know. Anyways, he worked, I often heard my mother say, on the docks. And that was only summer work. And in the winter, he was home all winter. They only worked in the summer, see.
But did she start working like right before you did?
Oh, yes. Mother worked before that. She worked before that, yes, because we had, like I had another sister that worked in the tailoring game, and I had two more sisters, and they were all able to help my mother along a little bit, you know.
They were all in tailoring?
Yes, they were all in tailoring. In fact, we formed the whole tailoring concern. We had a vest maker, a coat maker, and a pants maker. One of my sisters was a coat maker, one of my sisters was a vest maker, and I was the pants maker, although I started in the coat industry. So then I was 14 years old, and I already worked in this small contracting shop at that time. And
after Kunink Fisher.
After Kunink Fisher. When this strike came about, and I didn't know, I knew about strikes because one sister of mine was in the 1910 strike, my oldest sister. So I knew about it, and I thought it was great. So then when my sister said, well, if they're going to strike, you just go ahead. So it sort of encouraged me more. And then I didn't know what it was all about. I was only a youngster. And when these people were coming with the signs and stopping us and talking to us,
ticketing
around, they sort of encouraged us, you know. But to some of the people, you couldn't encourage because we didn't have bad bosses, don't you see? They were very nice people, and they treated us wonderful. So you see, they didn't want to hurt them, so they wouldn't go out. But I was out, and then the bosses said to us, Agnes, you're foolish, because why don't you come back to work? We can't do nothing. Our hands are tied. We're contracting work for Banner and Progress, and we cannot do nothing until they sign up, because they were the manufacturers. We were only contracting work for them. See? But this went on for a long time, but the organizing drive went on at that time. And they were organizing till this company signed up with Banner and Progress.
So you went back to work at that small shop?
At that small shop, and I worked there till we signed up with the union.
Did you go back before the strike was over?
Oh, yes, yes. I went back to work before the strike was over because they guaranteed us that everything. I spoke to some people that were interested in the union, and they said it was true that they couldn't do nothing. That if they were willing to sign up, well, it was best that I go back. And then we can spread the gospel in the shops, see?
Is that what you...
Yeah, then you spread the gospel in the shop.
Was this shop signed up during the organizing drive then?
No. During that organizing drive, no. Because from 1915, the organizing drive, first one big shop signed up, and then another big shop signed up, and then another big shop signed up. And when Banner and Progress signed up, then we signed up. See, then the business agents came in the shop and said, you're all going to go to the union building and join the union today. I'll never forget that day as long as I live because we paraded from the little contracting shop to North Avenue and Damon. We had a headquarters over there and we all joined the union. I think we paid 90 cents to join the union at that
time. How'd you feel that day?
I felt very good because my sister already belonged to the union.
You think that she had a lot of influence?
Yes, she did. She was very active in Local 39.
Uh-huh. Is that the one? Oh, you joined 144,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. And my other sister, she lives in Florida now. She was in 152.
Was there a particular reason you think that all three of you went into tailoring?
Well, in the olden days, I think it was It was like the capital of the clothing industry.
Chicago.
Uh-huh.
So it was because, a question of a job being
here? Yeah, and that was a question of a job. Mm-hmm. So what did we do? Almost all the people sent their children to the clothing factories. We had big shops. We had Kuppenheimer's and all these little contracting shops. There was a big shop even on the block that I lived. There was one across the street from me.
What kind of changes did you see in the industry from the time that you started until, until say, maybe 1930 or a little earlier when you moved into this building?
Well, we've seen a lot of changes. We were the first ones to get unemployment insurance, you know. Nobody was getting unemployment insurance, and I think that's how the whole thing originated, because if we lost so much time during the year, this year unemployment insurance, when it came, the people didn't have very much faith in it as far as I could see, because a lot of them thought that it was just a humbug, you know. But then when they seen that some of the people that felt different about it were getting money, then they felt different about it, although they couldn't do nothing about it because they already belonged to the union. But when they start getting this unemployment insurance, it wasn't much, but in those days it meant a lot because every little bit helped them, see? And of course, what can I tell you? We got sick benefit, And I told you the story about the sick benefit when we were only getting $10 a week, and the men were getting more than we. And then when I was a joint board officer, and I would get up every once in a while and speak about it, that I didn't think it was fair. They took just as much out of my pay. In those days, we were paying. They were taking it out on us, you know. I think it was a cent and a half or whatever. They were taking it out on us. We were paying as much to it as the men, and yet the men were getting more than we were, that we were entitled to as much as they were. So they gave us as an excuse the women were getting sick more oftener than the men. That was the alibi that they gave us. But in time, we worked it out. I mean, we got sick benefit the same as the men did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long did you work at that contracting shop?
I worked in that contracting shop until Banner took the contracting shops over. Then it was no more a contracting shop. Then we went to work direct to Banner. Then Progress went their way and Banner went their way. Progress started a place of their own. They didn't start, they already had.
Oh, Progress Tailoring, where we worked.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
See, she worked in Progress, and I worked in Banner. See?
Uh-huh.
And I was chairlady there.
And then
I remember the boss's name was Freiler, and he was son-in-law of Stein that made Paris garters and all of that. And I guess his father-in-law died and ruled him quite a bit, so he wanted to get out of it, and things were getting bad because of the year in 1929-30 when the big blow came, you know. And they gave it up, Progress took it over, Progress, and then they moved to Fort Wayne, Indiana. I was asked to go there too, but I didn't want to go. I couldn't leave my family.
You were making pants this whole time, right?
All the time I made pants, mm-hmm. Only for the short time that I was in Kuhnate and Fisher that I worked on coats.
Did you ever leave the tailoring industry to help out your husband?
The tailoring thing to help out my husband?
Yeah, yes. like when you mentioned that you did political work for him. Was that in your spare time?
In my spare time. Canvassing, ringing doorbells. That's what I meant. No, I never helped my husband politically in his work. Neither did I, because my husband, when he lost his job in politics, he opened up a tavern too. I used to help him in the tavern too, but not during working time. When I worked straight through all the time when there was work. Of course, when there wasn't work, it was a different story.
Mm-hmm. So you were working in the shop, you were taking care of your children.
And I took care of my mother and my children. I mean, after all, my mother got sick then later on, and she needed to help too, but I didn't stay home because I had a sister-in-law that lived upstairs, and she would take care of my mother during the day, and then I had my mother to take care of the rest of the time.
And Angus, when you were young, did you ever think about what you wanted to do or what you wanted to be?
No. I never thought. No. I think I was just a ready a tomboy kid. I was tough, you know. And I stayed tough. Maybe I'm still a little tough, but
How did you originally meet your husband?
In the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. In the neighborhood.
And you mentioned that you married pretty young, so.
Yes, I was 17 when I married. Mm-hmm. But it was all right because we had my mother, and we lived with mother. We didn't have to pay no rent, so he worked then. And I worked, so we had a chance to get along pretty good.
Until
he lost his hands. And my mother took care of my children no matter where I went. I was in Wilkes-Barre for about a month, Pennsylvania, organizing the textile workers. And Frank Rosenblum had asked me to stay, but I couldn't stay because I had too many other things to do at home. You know, I had my mother and my husband and the children, so I couldn't do it. I was in Detroit during the political campaign for a couple of weeks there.
What kinds of changes did joining the union make in the in the pattern of your life? How much, you know, what did you do for the union? How much time did you devote to it?
I devoted a lot of time, although it wasn't very pleasant because my husband wasn't always in favor of me doing what I have been doing. But union, I was union at heart, you know, and I just couldn't give it up because I was involved too much in it, you see. I've learned in the early struggles, you know, and I was too involved in it, and I just couldn't give it up.
What, your husband didn't like the time that you were devoting to
it? He didn't like the time that I was devoting, yeah, that's right. We had a lot of misunderstanding on account of that. Of course, I wouldn't want you to put that
in. What kinds of things were you involved in?
Well,
particularly
look,
when you first joined the union.
Well, when I first joined the union,
some of the first things.
Well, I remember attending a class on parliamentary procedure, and then we had meetings. We had politics then in those days too, because we had two headquarters. We had a headquarters on the north side, and we had a headquarters on the west side. And
which one were you?
I was on the north side. And then we had a little politics because when the business agents run for office, you know, we were in favor of one candidate and they were in favor of another candidate. And then it seemed like our candidate won at that time. But somehow or another, both sides got together and they thought that the other man would be a better man, see? So they gave him, made him the business agent. But we had politics in those days, and we used to have meetings sometimes to midnight. They lasted. Pro and con, you know.
To support a political candidate outside the union? Or?
No, they were all inside of the union. They were all from the shops, And I remember when they even stole a ballot box.
Was this for election of officers within the union?
Within the union. Within your own locals. Now, these men, we had, I think, 5 business agents at that time. From my own local. And now I don't think there isn't enough work for one business agent. There was Spitzer, there was Rothbart, there was Carlson, there was Magliano, there was Frank Sobieski. See, so we had quite a few business agents. And then most of the business agents, the oldest. We called him the senior business agent. And then came Rothbart. He was my business agent in the last number of years. But Sheps was my business agent that organized me. There was Sheps, Carlson, they organized me. And then there was later on, not too long after, Magliano came in because Sheps was transferred to Cincinnati. And then Carlson died. So then they got together and we made peace within our local. Where all politics were disbanded in our local, that, you know, the slate would be made, you know, and then all the officers used to follow the slate and do their things, such as, that isn't said that somebody else could run, but then when you were with the slate, you know, you always had a better chance. You know what I mean, don't you?
Were you active at all in any of the early organizing drives?
Oh, yes.
What kinds of, were you picketing?
Oh, yes. Not in 1950. I wasn't at that time, no, because then I had, my children came and then I couldn't. But after 1919, after my husband lost his hands, we were organizing. We were organizing the leather goods workers. I was very active. Joe Saviano can tell you how active I was. And we were organizing the... we had a strike at the Wilson's, and wherever they had a strike, we had the international strike. I was very active there, on the picket line all the time.
Do you remember any specific stories?
Yes, a lot of specific stories. We were, Clara Leon, you know, from the ladies local and the Rose and the whole group of us, you know, We were picketing one morning, early in the morning, and these people were coming to work, and we were stopping, and we tried to talk to them, but they wouldn't reason. They'd give us the elbow, you know. And naturally, they give you the elbow, you get good and mad, too. So you'd start a fight and pounding, and I remember, I gave, but I took too many a time. And I remember one time, Clara got a hold of a girl by the dress, and the girl jerked, and the whole dress stayed in Clara's hand. We were all trying in the paddy wagon that time. Yeah. And in the international, I was turned in the paddy wagon many times. And you know that I was never booked? The policeman that was stationed at the international used to come by my brother when my brother had the tavern. He used to say to my brother, "Why the hell don't you tell that kid sister of yours to get off the picket line?" My brother said, "She's old enough to know what's right and what's wrong." So then I remember when the whole bunch of us, when they took the whole bunch of us to the station and they wanted to book us, and I got away on them, and I didn't get booked. This policeman was there at that time.
Is that why?
He told me to take a walk. Oh, they could do a lot of things in those days if they wanted to, too. And when we used to have these picket lines, you know, in the Gallagher, we used to have a business agent, some of the other boys, and they were standing on that side, and we were following these girls, and these girls tried to give us the elbow, and Miguel Agut would say, "Come on, Dempsey, give it to them, give it to them." Don't put that in, because... Oh, yeah.
Well, it sounds like it was a little rough.
Oh, it was rough. And they were tough, too. The leather good workers were hard to organize. Mm-hmm. They were hard. And
how would you approach somebody that was really...
Well, first you approach them, you try to talk to them, and you try to explain to them how much better off they would be by joining a union that, not only of the benefits, but no boss could fire you whenever he wanted to because he didn't like the looks of you, and that's what they used to do before, you know. When you had a drag with a foreman in the shop, you used to get the best work, and you used to get the most money for it, until the union came and stepped in and said, "What's good for one is good for all. This is a union." But they used to do that. And if you didn't have a drag with the foreman, and he didn't like the looks of you, out you'd go, if you'd complain.
When did you organize the leather workers?
Oh, I don't remember now what year that was, but it's a long time.